I guess that we shouldn't be surprised that Cloris Leachman recently competed on Dancing with the Stars. Over her 82 years, she's continually reinvented herself. And in the process, she's won not only an Academy Award for her performance in The Last Picture Show, but a total of 9 Emmys, the most ever earned by an actor. Some of them were for her role as Phyllis, the self-involved neighbor on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. She's written an autobiography that fills in all the details called Simply Cloris. It's just out from Kensington Publishing, and I'm delighted to welcome the very talented Cloris Leachman to our show today. Hi.
Hi. Did you read the book?
You'll find out. You're one of the rare stars who kept your original name, and you began in the business when almost everybody was changing theirs. Did you get any pressure to change it?
Well, I was Amy Wallace, Jane Claiborne, April Claiborne, Tallulah Bank had named me.
Claiborne, I wonder why.
Well, that's a family name.
Uh-huh.
And Wallace is a family name. And then at the Actor's Studio, finally somebody said, "You have to change your name." I said, I know. I got out the New York phone book. This is at the Actor's Studio. And I got to the L section. At least, you know, my name begins with L. So I, you know, wiggled it all over and put my thumb in the L's, closed my eyes, and I opened my eyes, and guess what it said?
Leachman.
Leave it.
Oh, leave it. That's great.
L-E-A-V-I-T-T. Leave it.
So that was the last. Leave it, but it's good that you read it as leave it.
Well, it said leave it, though, if you just want to read.
And I'm not sure that Amy Wallace would have been as effective ultimately.
No, I don't think so.
You've done a lot of things over the course of your life. When you were writing the book, did you discover that you'd forgotten many of them? Did you have to research your own life?
There are a lot of stories I've had to leave out and a lot of things, of course, that I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. and you still don't remember them.
I still don't. Two of the most important ones, I can't remember what happened.
Oh, gee, that was a good story. I wish I could remember
it.
There's nobody to consult. You've been married to the same man for many, many years. Doesn't he remember?
He remembers most of my stories, yeah.
So you went to him and said, remember that time we were in Philadelphia?
And I don't remember about Gene Hackman, and I don't remember something else. What happened with Katharine Hepburn on the stage when I came down, and after 5 minutes she'd been on the stage alone. Oh, God.
You saw her when you were growing up in Des Moines, Iowa, didn't
you?
Yeah,
I was about 8 years old.
Well, you know, how much can you remember when you were 8, but did you know that this was a special experience?
Well, I knew it was special, but I had no idea I'd be playing opposite her.
From what I gather, the experience with Gene Hackman was special as well, but maybe that wasn't something you went into much detail with your husband.
I just can't remember what happened. That's funny.
Yeah, well, Dancing with the Stars is more recent. Did ABC come after you to do that?
No. You didn't read the book.
I know I did. I am asking the kinds of questions you're supposed to ask. My next question is, what did you have to do to convince them that you'd be right for it?
We had to have a meeting. They turned me down the first 2 times.
Because they felt you were too old? Or?
That's what it says in the book.
Mm. Well, you managed to raise your foot above your head, so you're still pretty limber at 82.
Well, as I said, Corky just lifted my foot up, and it went up there.
Still, I'm not sure I could get my foot up there. Did you have any bruises in the course of those 6 weeks on the show?
Did I? I don't remember. I don't think so.
I've heard that you said you have to decide to be young.
You have. I think that's right.
When did you make that decision?
You have
for yourself?
To decide different things in your life. When I was very young, about 6, I decided never to get bitter in my life, and that was the most wonderful decision.
Why? Can you really live by that kind of decision?
Well, if I made that decision, you have to live by it. But you can't just live by it. You have to look behind behavior and what's really going on. What's really going on? Because what seems to be going on and what you would judge is never it. Never.
But you were growing up in the Midwest. Do you think that it's easier to not be bitter in the Midwest than if you grow up in some of the tougher towns?
No, I don't. I think you have to make a decision. Mm. Or to lose weight. You have to make a decision.
Do you remember when you first caught the acting bug?
I don't know if I ever caught the acting bug. Everything I did, somebody would have seen it and asked me to do something else. It seemed to be the way it all happened.
But were you encouraged in Des Moines? Did people see some talent in you?
Well, we had a little local theater there with 50 seats. It was an old little church. And somebody saw me when I was 15. I did a play there, A Wilderness, and they gave me a scholarship to go to Northwestern for the high school summer program that they had there. And I did that, and I got the lead in the final thing we did, and that was very telling to me and encouraged me. And when I was 18, I got another scholarship to go back to Northwestern in college. And in my sophomore year, I was in Blithe Spirit, and I had to lose 10 pounds very quickly to get the part. But I got the faculty award then, which is usually reserved for a senior. And that was wonderful, telling.
How much after this did you enter the Miss America contest?
I didn't enter it. Somebody put my picture in a Miss WGN contest without telling me. It was a man from Chicago who worked for an advertising agency. And
this is before Bird Parks.
I think so. Lenore Slaughter was the head of the Miss America contest. Anyway, he entered my picture, and I came home that night from a date, and there was a telegram, that was my first I heard of it, saying, please appear tomorrow night at 7:30 with an evening gown and bathing suit and bring talent. So,
well, you were an actress. What talent were you going to bring?
Well, I played the piano and danced a little bit and read what I had to read. And finally I said, what else do you want me to do? I was at a microphone in a studio, and they were behind the glass. And they said over the mic, take down your hair. So I took the pin out of my hair. I hadn't even washed my hair. And it all had curled and fell nicely. And they said, congratulations, you're Miss WGN. Uh-huh. And that led to Miss Chicago, and that led to Miss America.
So. Although you didn't win ultimately. You came in...
I did win ultimately. You win ultimately. I won a $1,000 scholarship. And the second year I was in New York, I started taking singing lessons from Mary Martin's teacher. And 2 years later, I called the executive stage manager for Rodgers and Hammerstein and said, I want to audition for something. And they had me do something even more important than I was auditioning for.
South Pacific.
Yeah.
Wow, that had to be scary, auditioning, because you weren't a singer all your life. And
never in my
for
life.
Rodgers and Hammerstein?
I could harmonize to anything, but I didn't know one single word except Rockabye Baby in the Treetop. So that was the first time I'd ever sung the words to a song all the way through. And then the whole rest of the score, you know, they sing. Isn't that amazing?
So this is, where was this in relation to Mary Martin appearing in South Pacific?
She had done it, and then somebody else was playing the part. But there was an understudy, and she'd already had a vacation, so there was no reason to put anybody. They said, we'll call you in 2 weeks. We want you to play the part. It'll either be the London or New York or the Road Company. And the next day they called and said, we've arranged for you to do it for 4 weeks in New York on Broadway.
Was this before or after you made your first feature film, Kiss Me Deadly, Robert Aldridge's
It was
film?
Before.
So, but that had to be another major step for you, although I don't know whether appearing with Ralph Meeker was one of the great acting experiences of all time. Was he a good actor?
Oh, yeah. A darling man.
And Robert Aldrich is one of the greatest directors that ever lived, so you started near the top.
Then. Yeah, it was exciting.
And you'd already worked at the Actors Studio?
Yes.
Many people put distance between themselves and Ilya Kazan at the studio because of the testimony that he gave before the House Un-American Activities Committee. Was that a concern for you?
I was on the gray list myself, I found out. The director for something I did all the suspense. It was something I did every week for some reason.
On radio?
No, television. Oh. He would hire me. One time he said, Cloris, I love you, but we're doing something. We can't use you next week. And I said, why? He said, it's a Chinese girl. I said, oh, I can be a Chinese girl. So he said, well, all right. And so I was, and they put lids on me. And I was a Chinese girl. But back to that story, he came to me and said, if you tell anybody, I will never work again. But you're on the gray list.
What had you done?
Well, I had done The Crucible.
You mean just appearing in
just
an Arthur Miller play?
In an Arthur, because
put
he
you
was,
under a cloud?
Yeah, that's right. And amazing.
It was a very weird time in America, wasn't it?
Very weird. John Garfield came to me backstage at As You Like It and wanted to be in a movie with him. And it was one that Sinatra did later because John Garfield died 3 days later. He was on the stand,
too. In a legendary way, which we're not going to discuss on the air.
That's right.
When you were at the Actors Studio, were you committed to the method?
It wasn't a method. It was just wonderful. It was the most wonderful. We were just in an enchanted situation. Anytime you walk through those doors and participate, it was just magic and wonderful. And it's the first time I really began to realize what I was involved in, what being in a theater is, what being an actor is. And not the seedy, shoddy part that may be part of it, but it's a fraternity. It is. And I've been very proud and happy to have been chosen to do some of the things I've done.
My guest is Clarice Leachman, and she's written an autobiography with George Englund, her husband, which is called Clarice. It's published by Kensington. Your husband, George, was a friend of Marlon Brando, who was not at the studio, right? He was with Stella Adler at the time.
No, I don't know when he was with Stella, but he was at the studio, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And George does strike me as being very different from Marlon Brando. What was the nature of that relationship?
They were each spectacular individual men of the world, you know. They had wonderful personalities, and Marlon always kind of wanted to be like George. It was a competition in some ways. They both were very, just achingly funny and very brilliant and very imaginative and original. And they had both had father situations. Marlon hated his father, and George never had one. So that fulfilled something for them, and they just enjoyed each other so much.
Although I hope that George was easier to live with than Marlon seemed to have been.
Yes. George wrote a book about Marlon. It's just, I think, a wonderful book called, The Way It's Never Been Done Before,
mm-hmm.
My Friendship with Marlon Brando.
How long have you been married to George Englund?
Well, I think we were married about 25 years. Then he married Bonnie for another 25, and they had two children, one of whom died. So George lost two sons, one of ours and one of theirs. And
now you wrote the book with him.
Yeah.
So all's forgiven or whatever.
Oh, never. We never blamed each other.
Was it difficult maintaining a career while you were raising children?
Not at all. Really easy.
Although it must have been devastating when you did lose that son, Brian. Yeah, well.
It only gets worse, so don't think it gets better with time. It gets worse with time.
I remember when I really realized that you were something special, because I guess this is each generation comes to an actor at a different time, and that was when I saw you in The Last Picture Show. And you got an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress in that. Much of that part was actually silent, wasn't it?
Yeah, the last part.
But did that make it more difficult? Because I would imagine words make it easier to act a role.
Oh. Well, Peter was wonderful.
Peter Bogdanovich.
Yeah, excellent. I just saw him the other night after all these years. I'd had dinner at the Tower Restaurant on Sunset in L.A. And they said, Peter's here. I said, where? Upstairs. He's living. What? He's living here? And so they said, just dial zero. And I did. And he answered. And we talked for almost an hour. I had a wonderful time. So glad to see each other.
The scene which you say you think wound up clinching the Oscar for you was done in the first take. Is that the usual situation?
No, not at all.
Because it was really a complicated scene.
It was.
But if you had to do it again and again, do you think you could have done it as well?
Certainly the first part of the scene, definitely. I think I could. But Peter wouldn't hear of it. I had just learned my lines just as I arrived on the set. I finished learning them and came on the set and did it, and that was it. Only once.
You were 44 years old at that time. Isn't that a rough age for many actresses?
Why?
Because they no longer are getting the kinds of roles that they got earlier.
Well, I was doing Mary, Tyler Moore, and then that movie, and then Young Frankenstein, right, quickly.
You've done a lot of television, did The Twilight Zone, Rawhide, with Clint Eastwood before he went on to become Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
And also played Timmy's adoptive mom and Lassie.
Yes.
So would you take any role, or were those roles that you kind
of enjoyed?
Well,
I was very pregnant with my fourth son, and I told my agents I didn't want to work anymore. Well, I wanted to be with my son. And they said, well, just come in and say hello to the boys. It was William Morris at the time. And so I went down to see everybody, and I left with the part. And I was nursing Georgie. Oh, I'd had him. But it wasn't good. I was there for, you know, morning, noon, and night. I'd get home at 7:30. And it was very, very difficult for a year.
I'm going to be talking to Mary Tyler Moore at the 92nd Street Y tonight. Is there anything you would like me to ask her?
Give her a big hug.
Another role that you just mentioned was Frau Blücher in Mel Brooks's Young Frankenstein. I'm sure that was a real gas to be working with the two of them. But you've said that a lot of the best lines never made it into the movie.
The lines did, but I don't know if my timing is the best, because Gene would always laugh. Oh, his face really would break into two pieces. Just each one was separate laughing. But I credit Gene with my performance. We just responded to each other, and what he gave me was so electrifying. When I say, would you like something? Would you like not a martini, would you like a brandy perhaps before retiring? He says, no, thank you. And I was so surprised that he didn't say, oh, no, thank you, but he said, no, thank you. I looked like I'd been, you know, hit by a wet fish.
You should know that Cloris Leachman will be speaking and signing books tonight at 7:30 at the Lincoln Triangle Barnes & Noble store. That's at Broadway at 66th Street. The book includes all sorts of candid things that we couldn't get to because time limited us.
Well, but it's a lot of fun.
But yeah, people can read them. And I did wonder whether you felt that you were burning some bridges with some stories that you told.
Maybe.
Cloris Leachman's autobiography, Cloris, written with George Englund and published by Kensington Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been did you burn any bridges here, do you think? Or, I mean, does that matter to you?
I feel sorry about what I said about Diane Keaton. She directed me in that movie. What's it called? Now and Then? No. No.
It just wasn't
hanging
a
up.
Pleasant
it's called
experience.
Hanging. It was it was pleasant, but I didn't like that she would have Meg Ryan say other words to me, you know, to shock me. Said, what? You tell me what you wanted me to do.
I guess she thought she was helping.
But
as
I apologized to her because I'm sorry about that.
Thank you so much, Clark.
Thank you.
Phyllis, it sure isn't you.